when you go to see a comedy show, you usually have three people. You have a host and a feature act and the headliner, or maybe you have four people. And when men are trying to get on that show, they have a chance to fill one of each of those four slots, okay? You know, a guy can get any of those spots. If a girl gets on the show, I don't have a chance to get one of those other three spots because they won't have two women on a show. You very rarely see two women on a ticket.
This is Wine, Women, and Revolution with your host, Heather Warburton, coming at you here on New Jersey Revolution Radio. And welcome to Wine, Women, and Revolution. I'm your host, Heather Warburton, coming at you here on New Jersey Revolution Radio. You can find us online at www.njrevolutionradio.com. Follow us on all the social medias and get us wherever you get your podcasts from. Today I have... We're actually going to do something a little bit lighter than usual, but it's still going to be kind of a deep dive. I have an extremely funny woman who cracks me up every time I get to hang out with her in the studio with me today. So first, I want to welcome you back to the show, Michelle Tomko.
Hi, Heather. Thanks for having me.
It's good to have you back again. The last time you were on, people really enjoyed it.
Oh, good.
You definitely came as like a little moment of lightness after I did a fairly dark interview right before yours. So having a little bit of moment of lightness was good.
It seems like I'm the human interest story. At the end of the newscast after all of the beheadings and whatever happened.
And here's this nice person doing nice things, but really you do.
I do. I'm creating change through laughter, not as much protesting. I also want to let your audience know that that is not me chewing on a bone. That's your lovely
She's lying, by the
killer.
Way. She totally is chewing
the podcast bones. Starts and I hear crunch, crunch, crunch. I'm like, great. Like,
she is chewing the bones of her enemies.
I don't want to get fat shamed like I was eating popcorn or something and being rude on your podcast. Like, can she just stop eating for 20 minutes, please? So... I'm going to take a picture. I'm going to take a picture and post it.
And just to prove that it is the puppy chewing on a bone. But, you know, you're a comedian by profession.
I am.
And your job is, you know, you make people laugh for a living. And I think it's a fair thing to say that it's a fairly male-dominated industry.
It definitely is.
And I wanted to talk a little bit about that because that is something I like to talk about, you know, feminism and all that. Is what is it really like being a woman... exceeding and excelling in this very almost toxic masculine at times environment that you can find yourself in?
So there's a lot of answers to that. One is just starting very basically. The energy of stand-up comedy is very male. You say, when you come off stage and you've done well, you've killed, you murdered, you slayed, go get them. Go for the throat. It's very aggressive. So I guess don't write in. I mean, I know women can murder people as well, but you know what I'm saying. In general, it is that sort of violent, you're going off to war. You are kind of, you get set up backstage like you're going off to war. Like you got to get them. You got 10 seconds to kind of get their attention and command the room, command the space. You use that mic as, you know, that's your sword and shield and spear when you're up there. So that's from the jump. It's not a community or anything. It's you, you and them, you and them. And then you hope to all come together, but it, you know, can turn into you against them quickly.
Oh, no.
If you say the wrong thing and then, you know, especially in today's kind of climate, you can lose half the room like that. It's amazing how quickly you can lose half the room politically if you talk about anything. It doesn't matter what side you're on because there's comics on both sides of the coin. The other thing in terms of men versus women is there became this wives' tale that women aren't funny, you know, women aren't supposed to be funny or speak up or anything, you know, back in the day. And then that kind of just morphed into women aren't funny, women can't be funny. And then it morphed into, I heard a local radio guy say something like, I don't understand female comedians. He said, And then his producer, you know, chimes in and says, yeah, I don't really understand them either. And then that's such a terrible thing to say on such levels, because then he's immediately insulted all females and all males, because he's saying that males aren't smart enough to comprehend the jokes of women. And then he's saying that, you know, he's just disparaging, like, that women can't have this particular skill. So that's just terrible on all fronts. But that is a thing that keeps going, so much that it was even a South Park episode, you know, where Cartman was like, come on, man, everybody knows that, like, women aren't funny. And that was the running joke throughout whatever the episode was about. But, you know, everybody knows that, you know, and knock it off, Kyle. So that was my Cartman. If anyone needs me for voiceover work, you can follow me.
You can follow me.
MichelleDomko.com. So I wonder what everybody's listening to now that they've turned off me doing impression. Enjoy whatever Weeds rerun you're watching, I guess, right? If you're one of Heather's followers. So, you know, there's a lot going on, and I try to just keep my Joan Rivers mantra going, because when somebody asked her, is it harder for women to be a comedian? She said, listen, it's hard for comedians who aren't funny, or whatever she said. So I just, like, just, she didn't have it in her view, her field of vision. And that kind of stuff really didn't happen to her, because she, for a time, you are old enough to remember, you might not be old enough to remember, but, you know, she used to, when Johnny Carson would go on vacation, she's the one that hosted the Tonight Show.
Okay. Yeah.
Johnny Carson didn't even want to let female comedians on the show, let alone sit in the chair and host, you know. And there's never really been a major female nighttime talk show
host. Right, yeah, I was just thinking about that I can't really think of any late show.
That's because
late
there
show
aren't any.
Type.
There hasn't been any, yeah. So hopefully, you know, we're moving, you know, towards that. Tiffany Haddish or somebody, I'll get in there. I know that there was talks about having someone, and I don't think it's started yet, and I don't think it's on a major network. I know I read an article about it, so it's either about to happen or happened, and maybe it's on a cable network or something, that at least a woman's hosting late night. So all that's going on, and you're battling. I think I might have said this to you before, but, like, when you go to see a comedy show, you usually have three people. You have a host and a feature act and the headliner, or maybe you have four people. And when men are trying to get on that show, they have a chance to fill one of each of those slots. Okay. Now, if you put a woman on the show, which it's a lot of women don't ever get to headline. There's a lot of women that are better than the men that are headlining after them. A lot of clubs will say, I know that there's clubs even in New Jersey, because I've heard it. I don't let women headline.
Wow.
But anyway, going back to the spots, you know, a guy can get any of those spots. If a girl gets on the show, I don't have a chance to get one of those other three spots, because they won't have two women on a show. You very rarely see two women on a ticket. In fact, when I opened for Dina Blizzard, she was like, what are you doing here? Like, they never have two women on a ticket. Like, well, I asked if I could open for you, and then they put me on. And, you know, it was at a club in the city that's not there anymore. So my chances are just less, you know. I mean, a guy has a chance of getting four out of four slots. I have a chance of getting one out of those four slots. And if there's another woman, I'm out. And sometimes I'm just out altogether, because it's, you know, some kind of sausage factory, bachelor party, festival thing that they just wouldn't put a woman on. So, you know, I mean, I didn't get a gig last summer. I heard for the booker was advocating for me to do this festival, and the you know, producer, who's very well known, like, you know, no, she's not funny, women aren't funny, that whole thing, you know, to just, you know, I was the best person in the city, really, to have that job, because it was going to be a lot of crowd work and stuff that I specialize in, that people who follow me come to see me for. People don't come to see me that know me locally in Atlantic City for my, you know, well-crafted material, which I have. They come to hear me make fun of them. They're offended if they're left out of the show.
If you're not making fun of them, they're
coming.
Upset.
They wanna be in the show, and they wanna hear all the crowd work, and that's what people like the best. So it's difficult, and you're just never gonna get. And lastly, it's just like anything else. You know, I might look like a third grade teacher that was mean to this person who books this club, and I'm never going to get in there. It doesn't matter if I have six Emmys or whatever. It just, I'm going to bug them or rub them the wrong way. Or, you know, one joke can turn the tide. But that's for men or women, too, you know.
Right.
I mean, if you look like my, you know, ex-boyfriend, then you're not getting on my show because screw him and everybody that looks like him.
Or, so do you do political stuff? You were talking about losing the audience when you're doing, if you do something that's too political. Do you mention political stuff that may, or things that may have been politicized that really even aren't political?
I do rarely, and I'm ashamed to say it is just a confidence thing, because I feel like I'm not, I feel I need to know from every which way, because people are so defensive about it nowadays. I need to know every fact and figure. Like, it's too time consuming.
It's like a research project instead of a comedy.
It's too time consuming. And then if I get into it with somebody in the audience, I got to be ready with the comebacks. I got to know my stuff. And then to what end that I'm going to argue with this guy for 5 minutes of a 12-minute set or 25-minute set and then be, you know, upsetting or not being entertaining to the rest of the people. So I just kind of stay away from it. So some of it's just a little bit of laziness, because I just feel like I'd have to know, you know, it's like when you're battling like Bible quotes with people, like, right. You know, and you need to like Leviticus, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I don't know that kind of stuff to get into a battle with people about that. So I do a couple little dumb Trump jokes, just like, you know, I hope he doesn't rename the Grand Canyon Bigley Hole or something, you know, something like that.
Kind of the low hanging really fruit as far as Trump goes.
This stuff that everybody can laugh at, just to touch upon, and I say, I did a couple political things for Republicans, a couple little fundraisers. And I like, y'all, I'm so glad that you know, this Republican had me in, because the Democrats' checks never clear, or what, you know, like the Democrats can't afford me, or just right. Like real just stupid cocktail party stuff.
Right, yeah.
Cocktail party stuff, because you want to be current, but you just, I'm telling you that you just, it is 50-50 with these audiences. It's just literally 50-50 splits around our area here in South Jersey. So you're just gonna not make half of the room laugh if you made fun of anybody.
Right.
You know, you could make fun of Nancy Pelosi, people could potentially have people walking out, you know. You could get screamed at for the Trump people, or groans when you talk about Bernie, or it's crazy. So if you don't know, if you're not Bill Maher, I don't know why you would be doing it, or Louis Black.
If that's not your shtick specifically that you focus on.
It's not your shtick. And you have to remember that the gigs that I do at this VFW, they're trying to throw money at the Toys for Tots things, have a couple beers, and go home. They're not coming for a speech, you know. I mean, I have to also do my job. You got to get your $20 worth of laughs, uh-huh. You know, like that's my... Now, when I do other things and all on the podcast and you know, in real life, I try to live well and live my values, and my Facebook page has my political opinions on it, things like that, but not the show. Like the show, they gotta laugh, you know, try to teach them something. I more try to teach them with the an LGBT bit that I do is really my teachable moment in my act, and a lot of times I have to gauge whether that's gonna go over. Like sometimes it goes over, sometimes it doesn't. You gotta read the room. But the joke is, you know, I don't really get, I don't need all these liberals helping me with this gay thing. Like, it, you know, when I first signed up, like you couldn't get married, you couldn't get pregnant, you couldn't go to church, you couldn't join the army, and no one in your family spoke to you again. That is the point. That's why you sign up to be gay, you know, and that's nice. People come up to me and say, I never thought about it that way. It's a whole bit, which you can see at MichelleTomko.com. So that's teachable moments. People, you know, college guys like high five me like, dude, that was so funny. And then mom came up to me at a college gig in Ohio and was like, I never thought about it that way. That's, you know, that's what you want to hear.
Uh-huh.
I never thought about it that way. So that's where I've found my little teachable moments. I get everybody to like me, and I'm just like this nice little chubby person making fun of this and that. And
well, that was kind of where I wanted to go next is, you know, things are rough. Like, mm-hmm. you know, times are not easy for people. Does that make it harder for you to craft material? Or does it make it easier for you to craft material?
You know, there's a lot of material. My friend Zach, who's a comic, had the best one-liner to me of the night of the election. He just said, all comedians are secretly happy right now. You know? And he's right, because, I mean, there's a wealth of material there. But, you know, you got to get people to listen to you. You got to get people to like you. And it's not, it's, you know, they're not hiring you to teach you something, or they're not coming to a political rally. So you just have to be fair to them. You can't do a bait and switch. You can't charge somebody $20 to see Frozen 2. And then, you know, you just start playing Reefer Madness or whatever, you know, and they're like, hey, I came to see Frozen 2. Why am I watching Reefer Madness? And, you know, do you like how I'm tying in the weed theme to everything?
Yes. All I gave weed. Her some flyers.
All weed all the time. Wine, weed, and song. Follow us.
So, yeah. We're not even doing the wine thing here today.
And you know what's ironic? I have no wine. I have no weed.
That might be able speaking to be remedied, of a bait and switch,
I have been offered ice water, and the dog hasn't even offered to let me have some of the bone. But you know, there's always going to be something to make fun of. There's always going to be a way to see something in a different way. And you know, I like when people come out to. I like when people come out to see me. Even supporting live comedy is just hard right now, because right? there's 5,000 channels that you have. There's a million podcasts you can listen to, and people are just lazy. And it's when it's raining, the shows are not as well attended as when it's nice and sunny outside, because it's like, hey, I'm in my jammies and just watch 10 episodes of something on Netflix. You know, the struggle is real for all live entertainment.
Right. But you'd think, too, people need it more than ever now. They need someone that's going to make them laugh and possibly feel a little bit better. Sure. Like, you know, I'm a fairly intense person, and even I can't be intense all the time. You know, sometimes I'm going to watch Netflix. Like yesterday I was watching A Christmas Prince on Netflix.
Yeah. Okay. You're Christmassy. Do you watch Lifetime movies?
No.
You're not a Lifetime.
Not the thing. Woman.
The Hallmark Channel. You don't watch those.
No. They're really not my thing.
So funniest thing happened last week. My friend, Joelle, she loves those, and she's fuzzy slippers, and she gets her blanket, and she watches the Hallmark one. And I stopped over, and she was watching a Hallmark one. I said, oh, I don't want to interrupt your movie. She's like, no, that's okay. We can talk a little bit. I'm like, you know, just so you know, they end up happy and in love at the end. And then we were watching a commercial, and it was like, Christmas in Montana, and she was like, oh, a new one. And I'm like, it's not a new one, it's the same one that we just watched, except the guy's gonna have a cowboy hat on. It's like they're all the same.
The
like,
woman from the city is going like to be unfulfilled till she goes to the
Valerie
country
Bertinelli in the most challenging role of her career. But it was just super funny because they're just all the same, and it's just like, you know, a Christmas miracle. I'm like, yeah, the miracle is he comes back from the army and they fall in love, and like, you know, and this time he has a cowboy hat on, but it's gonna be the same, a Christmas puppy. I don't, but somehow people fall in love at the end, I don't know. So I don't like those kind of things. That, I mean, I really like the surprise factor. I really like to flip the script. I'm always saying to younger comics, flip the script on it. That's that gay marriage thing, because a gay comic is going to get up and Trump, and talk about being the same and being, and you know, so to get to meet people where they're at, to meet this like blue collar couple that's in the, I'm going to say like, I'm not for gay marriage either. You're not doing me any favors. Like, leave me alone. Like, I had it together. Like, you know, when I was awesome. Like, whenever my girlfriends wanted to settle down, I could go, but it's illegal. Like, it's like, that's great. And then, like, the guys are laughing and the women are laughing. And it's like, I'm meeting people where they're at when you do it like that. And then, you know, maybe get some thinking, or at least say that I'm cool. I proposed to my girlfriend on stage back in May.
Congratulations.
It was at a bar show. So it's like a no cover bar show that I do at Beret in the city. It's a Cajun restaurant in Atlantic City. And I do a show there once a month. So there's no cover. So inevitably, there's some people that are just coming in just trying to get a beer. Mm-hmm. Some people come to watch the show. It's kind of like a noisy, coyote, ugly situation that I'm in. It's good Navy SEAL training for a comedian. So this guy comes up to me, and he's like an urban guy, you know, just tall, lanky, not like a comedy fan or anything. Like he was just there having drinks, and He came up to me afterwards. He was like, yo, I don't know a lot about this, you know what I'm saying? But like, you cool. That was cool. And he gave me like a fist bump. So he's probably, that was probably first like lesbian proposal, I would imagine,
that he's this ever man has attended.
But he made a point to come up after me. Like, I didn't go up to him or bump into him or, you know, let him use my cigarette lighter or whatever. He just made a point to come and say that. So it's like, how else would that connection ever been made? Or how else would he have been thinking
along? You may have been lines? The first gay person he's ever had a conversation with, possibly.
I mean, possibly, yeah. You know, or the other way, that his brother's gay and he hates him, maybe, and that brought him around or something. You know, I don't know. You never know how you affect people bumping into him or not. That was not me with the squeaky either, just so you know.
She has brought the weirdest selection of stuff with her. She's chewing on bones. She has a squeaky toy. Never, it's her comfort item, I think.
Never work with children or animals, Heather. That's an old theater thing. Like, never work with children or animals.
So. But my show would not be my show without my puppy occasionally coming right. in and interrupting things. She's a very political puppies are great for politics. Ah. You take them out somewhere canvassing with you, mm-hmm. and everybody, like, kids come over to pet the cute puppy, and then the parents are kind of like kidnapped, and they have to like talk to you while the kids are petting the puppy. So you can like start telling them about, oh, I want you to do this or do that, and the kids are like, oh, cute puppy, and the parents are trying to pull the kids away.
You're right. That's the same thing that I was trying to describe, and you described it better. Yeah, I mean, you have to, when you're doing the stand-up, you have to get just people to like you, and then you can sort of, you know,
have you considered bringing a cute puppy on stage with you?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know if it would translate, but it works very well with you. They would, single guys do that, don't they? They go to the dog park with dogs.
They pick up girls, they borrow dogs. Chicks
or vice versa, or same sex, don't write in. I feel like you have people that listen that are gonna write in and go, Michelle is very offensive and there's gender fluidity and blah blah blah. Don't write in. I'm old and leave me alone.
And if you write in, I'm probably not giving it to her anyway. So, you know.
But you're right. Yes, you have to find like the cute dog. Like, I say something else in my routine. So I say, who's been married the longest? Or sometimes people have anniversaries. It's their 40th anniversary. Anybody else been married longest? Fine. Who's been married longest? Oh, congratulations. Everybody claps. And I go, well, clearly you believe in same-sex marriage. And sometimes they make a side eye that, and they don't. Sometimes I'm like, well, clearly you believe in same-sex marriage, because after 46 years, it's the same. And then everybody's kind of like, you're just flipping this thing. You're giving them imagery that they don't always see. They're hearing words and phrases that they don't like to use or hear, but they're hearing it in a different way. And I think it just all slightly helps.
It's like desensitization training for, you know, like if you're afraid of like snakes and they like show you pictures of snakes, and then like, that's like a psychological thing.
And I'm big about meeting people where they're at. I you know, guys said to me, he's like, I don't like when this guy, you know, patients come in and the guy refers to another guy as his husband. I'm like, why not? He's like, I don't know. It just bugs me. And then everybody, blah, 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 they want to go at mm-hmm. him at this dinner party. And I'm like, hang on. Like, I think it looks weird when I'm watching a movie and two guys are kissing two, you know, and I'm gay, like always, like gold star lesbian, you know, gay. So it's not anything to do with me being homophobic. But I haven't seen that. I've seen hundreds of thousands or millions of imagery of, you know, Fred and Ginger dancing, and practically zero images of two women dancing or two guys dancing or two guys on top of a wedding cake. Like, practically zero. It's got to be 100 to 1, that just images that you've seen your whole life. So like, it's going to take everybody a minute to get with that.
So you think that people will get there eventually, you know?
I don't know.
Are you optimistic?
I mean, everything's kind of slowly changing, but, you know, the pendulum just swings so wild with the they, them pronouns and stuff that's there's going to probably have to be a couple generations are going to need to die off before that's just too offensive. My one friend said to me, I'm like, I'm not offended because I'm homophobic. I'm offended because I'm an English major. That's one person. I just can't do it. You know, so you got to meet people where they're at. You got to meet people where they're at politically and stuff too. I mean, you can't battle with people. You got to try to find empathy, and it's hard. It's hard to find empathy. You know, the steel worker finds hard to find empathy with they and them pronouns. And I find it hard to have empathy for, you know, Christians who kind of say Trump is defending their values and stuff when he knows he's not, even just being like a womanizer or just, I mean, he's broken a lot of the Ten Commandments to me.
Right, yeah. It's like a checklist of things he's done, like, oh, I broke that one.
Yeah, because I went to Catholic school for 12 years, so like he has certainly broken a bunch of the Ten Commandments, and it's like we can't, I know that they don't mean that or think that. They just like that he delivered the Supreme Court justices that
right.
He
came. It's a very sort of superficial, shallow.
Yeah,
examination.
I know they
of
don't
things.
Believe it, but that they say it is just difficult for me. And then, you know, because I think of all the nice little old Catholic ladies that I know that knitted me things when I was a child, and it's like, you know, there's so many other people that they could put up on that pedestal to defend values mm-hmm. that are not all bad. And it's just disturbing to me that it's this guy, because I just don't like when things aren't fair, and I don't like when things are just, you know, you don't tell me the sky is purple,
right?
And so that kind of stuff just really is an Achilles heel for me, that lying and unfairness about mm-hmm. things.
The hypocritical, you know, say one thing and do something completely different.
Exactly. You know? Exactly. You know, and I'm human and I'm guilty of it. And I'm a hypocrite about a lot of things. I'm sure, you know, my feet sweat. I have leather shoes on, but I will, you know.
Are those two things related somehow?
I'm just saying I will break. If I thought you were abusing your dog, I would break into this house when you weren't home. Because if I would call the authorities, if they didn't do anything, I would break into this house and probably take her out of here.
Right.
But then I have leather shoes on. You know?
Okay.
And
so
everybody is a hypocrite about everything. And it's just kind of trying to find your way. And that's what's good about having a sense of humor. You have a good sense of humor because you're always giggling and laughing and stuff when we talk.
I'm just high, you know.
Yeah. Well, okay. That can I also want to point out that Heather has a prescription for her highness. So, you know, it's all on the up and up and legal. Don't come bursting in here. There's going to be some
DEA.
DEA is like, my son wants to be a they, and just take me out in cuffs because they're like, you know. And again, I'm just ice water. God, I got to get a better agent or contract or something. You can go to a weed show. I should at least get weed. There's 150 bottles of wine in here, by the way. This is like the nicest podcast studio I've ever been in. It's like a little bed and breakfast. I'm in the wine cellar podcast room.
But so the next thing I did want to get to was the last time I had you on, you were talking about the art scene in Atlantic City that you're also involved in.
I am.
And you were having like selfies where people dressed up as famous paintings before. Was that what you were?
That is what my project was in 48 blocks. And I didn't get to do 48 blocks is, of course, there's 48 blocks in Atlantic City. So they call the Atlantic City Arts Foundation does a festival every June, usually coincides with the solstice. It actually started because a couple citizens started the a solstice parade, and then it morphed into the Atlantic City Arts Foundation, where they're now, this year, will start to have three employees with salaries, you know, livable salaries, modestly livable salaries. Please donate to the Atlantic City Arts Foundation so I don't have to buy lunch for these people, because I can't afford it either. So,
because you're a woman comic, and
that's
you're
right.
Probably not getting paid as much either.
I get paid so low. I can't imagine. I'm in these bar gigs and
you're
things.
You're charging dozens of dollars for your appearance.
I don't know how much more the men would be getting. If they're getting more, I'd be surprised. There's so little. There's such narrow margins. I want to say since I've started mm-hmm. producing the shows, there's such narrow margins. I don't know that I'm getting paid less. I hope not. I never thought about that. Thanks, Heather.
I've totally ruined the comedian's day. She's got a gig tonight and she's gonna be like, so everything sucks.
Everything is terrible now. So no, I'll go to a Christmas party. I'm going to a Christmas party tonight, so I'll cheer back up later tonight. But the Atlantic City Arts Foundation is great. And then that was really started by my friend Daryl Boltice wanted to have a solstice parade. Weird. I went to my friend Whitney Allman. They sort of got this parade off with citizens, and now there's a board of directors, and it's everything's great. They do this festival, and mine was performance based. So I dressed people up as the Mona Lisa and took their picture, and you know, just a bunch of little famous paintings. We all did tableaus. It's French. So I didn't get to do anything this year because I got a fellowship. I'm also a fellow. I got an Images and Voices of Hope fellowship this year, and I completed my project. And I did a performance at Dante Hall. I did a bunch of interviews of random citizens. I called it Yo 11 because that's a gambling term for craps.
Okay.
And it's a gambling term. You say yo before you bet 11 so that the croupier doesn't think you meant 7 and it puts your money on the wrong number. So if you want to bet on 7, you say put this on 7. And then when you want to bet on 11, you go yo 11 if you didn't.
I did not know this.
So I interviewed 11 different people and I reenacted them on stage like Anna Deavere Smith does all the time. And there's an HBO special if you want to check out kind of what I did. I kind of did what she did. And I had hours and hours of tape and I just found random people. And it just recently happened to me, just completed this project and it's going to affect me, I think, in my work. It was just neat. Everybody had a story. I didn't try to do demographics for demographics sake. Like, you know, I'm sorry to the Asian population. I didn't have like an Asian person or a Muslim person. I kind of got who I got. I was looking for people that were doing good things in the city because the fellowship was about restorative journalism. How are people helping after a tragedy? You know, so it's mm-hmm. The story isn't that your house burnt down. The story is what you do after your house burnt down. Well, when you moved in with your parents and your mother, her cancer went into remission because you were doing all these great holistic things with her and stuff. It's restorative journalism. That's what Images and Voices of Hope teaches journalists. So I went to trainings and then I found people. I found a guy who's really struggling with his recovery, but he's also helping people. Like when I was interviewing him, we were on the boardwalk and he got up and he like said, hang on, I got to talk to this guy. Yo man, Leon, what's going on? Like, you know, I can get you into recovery. I'm, you know, connected with Enlightened. I speak at all their events, man. Call me. I'm serious, man. Get off the street. Come here, Michelle, meet Leon. You know, look at these pictures. He's such a great artist. And he's doing that all really with still the shakes and only a year.
Right. His struggles, but he's putting that like to help other people.
Just out of prison a year. You know, come on, Ray, you can make it. If he makes it to January 5th, I think he's a year and a half in. But I had him, and then, you know, I had Angela Burton, who's a singer, just some old timers, really historians of Atlantic City. So, you know, I just had these 11 people, and it was so random. And you could really just throw a dart, at the house maps, and just whoever you got would have a story. You'd have a great story, I'm sure, Heather, how you got to where you are. I mean, just learning that everybody has a story. I think it's something that I'm going to do every year. And I'm actually going to do on Leap Day. I'm doing I'm going to cut about a half hour off of it. So I'm going to make everybody shorter. But I'm the headliner for the Leadership Studios Gala at Gateway Playhouse. The tickets are $50, but I think there's wine and food involved in your $50, and I'm going to be the headliner doing this Yo 11 production again. So it's February 29th if anybody's interested in that or you need to throw money at a good cause. Are you familiar with the Leadership Studio?
No, I'm not.
So the Leadership Studio started about 3 years ago. It's Allie Nunzi and Kathy Whitmore. They're partners in a yoga studio in Philadelphia. They're partners with Grace and Glory Yoga in Northfield. And those are profitable businesses. Then they mm-hmm. opened the Leadership Studio and on Tennessee Avenue, like right in the hood, and they just had free yoga on Saturdays. They do free yogas right on the courthouse. So when people come out of their court cases, they can do yoga on the steps when weather permits. Like just getting people right when they're maybe vulnerable enough or at their bottom where they can ask for some help. And they now have changed the policy to the Leadership Studio is literally pay what you can. And I mean, there's a jar. There is not anybody with anything in your face or forms to fill out or anything. It's pay what you can if you can. So you can literally go every day, twice a day, 3 times a day for free to yoga for the Leadership Studio. And it's just a goodwill service that they're providing, and they're having their big fundraiser. So it's just a great place to support. They've also trained a bunch of people in yoga, to become yogis, I guess, you know, to certified teachers.
Right.
They've paid tuition for several people for certified. I've been there to yoga class when literally someone is clearly maybe high or just trying to quit and like hi, I just, you know, I'm finally made it here today. And the great, let me get you a mat. Like, it's just crazy mm-hmm. hippies running around giving free yoga to people. And I'm happy to support them. So I'm going to get to get a do over for this Yo 11. But, you know, I think it's something that I'm going to do every year and get into that kind of storytelling biz.
That sounds really awesome. Yeah.
It really went well. I mean, the community really came behind, you know, I had food and sponsors and Mark Colazzo over at his, you know, Tennessee Avenue places brought, you know, the Rhythm and Spirits brought food and made chocolate, made a big tray of brownies, which, I don't know what they put in them, but they're, I don't usually go bananas like about desserts. This is all my ring around my keg around my tummy instead of a six pack is more about jalapeno poppers than chocolate
than
cake.
Brownies, but these were good brownies.
Really good. I mean, I had sponsors and people kept saying, I laughed, I cried. And it's just really community oriented.
You can see on your face, it really moved you. Like, you know, getting into this work definitely kind of.
It did to really kind of just kind of do something meaningful and sort of, I really made it. I did have a singer. So obviously she's in the press, Angela Burton, because she has a CD out and stuff. But I was trying to find people that aren't in the paper, more that you wouldn't know. There were two people that I didn't even identify because of the work they were doing. There's a priest that just kind of needs to be more on the down low. And then, of course, I didn't want to out the man in recovery who just got out of prison. And someone else talked about their recovery from alcoholism and let me use her first and last name. And I was really proud of her about that. Like, she said, no, tell it. Let's do it. It's part. And then she told me that, thanked me and said it was part of her process now, recovering, telling the story to me, which just, you know, I'm not big on feelings. So I was like, man, she's like, Jill got to me. You know? I thought she was going to be a lighthearted interview. She was just one of these yoga hippies who's my friend.
And then she ended up being something really deep.
And then she told me she's in, and I'm like, oh, that's why you were so fun loving. And at the, I just didn't put it together. I mean, I had seen her times like, oh, Jill's feeling no pain tonight, but it's Atlantic City.
Right. Yeah. It's kind of, that's the culture of people
everybody's
that are on vacation there.
You don't know who really has an issue or not unless you know them. You
right.
Know? So.
So that's coming up February 29th.
February 29th on Leap Day. Yeah. So you can check that out if you want. It's called the Leadership Studio. But yeah, and check out the Leadership Studio. I mean, they didn't pay me to plug this, but I just happened to come up. They're worthy of your support, I guess. If you quit yoga and have a, just donate your mat to them. I don't know, anything you can do for them, I'm sure they'd appreciate it.
So since we're doing plugs now, also, you have your open mic nights that you do every other week?
I do. I have a little residence at Beret. It's a Cajun restaurant, and your listeners will know it one of two ways. It's the old Saratoga's, which was a gay bar back in the day when New York Avenue was New York Avenue, as a lot of my interviewers said. And then it also, I think the name was Satin Dolls, which was a strip club. So I think either way, probably most of your listeners would know the building. It's 201 New York Avenue in Atlantic City. It's called Beret. It's a Cajun restaurant now. Beautiful sound system, beautiful stage. All talents welcome. Oh my God, we've had jugglers, we've had improv troupes, we've had full bands come set up. It's every other Tuesday. You just have to go on the Beret website to kind of follow it, because now it got all wonky because of like holidays came up and whatnot. So just check. It's every other Tuesday. So I don't know what I should be able to rattle off the dates, like the pi sequence, like the Fibonacci sequence. I should know them, but I don't.
Do you know the Fibonacci sequence?
Well, I was in a play. I was in a stage reading about the 1 3. No, it's just like 1 3. It's prime numbers. It's like 1 3 5 7 9. A lot. But you should be impressed that I even knew what it is.
I actually think I might know part. I'm that big of a geek. Like, people don't get how big of a geek I am. I actually might be able to go through pretty high.
People remember it into pretty high numbers as like a thing. But yeah, it goes into the primes, I guess. Someone is banging their head against the table because I'm totally wrong about what I'm saying. Some like math geek that listens to this is like.
I think that's the one where each number is like the sum of the two numbers before it. That's that one, maybe.
Oh, that's right. That's right. That's right.
It was a long time ago. This had been 20 years ago that I was in this. This is when I lived in Cleveland, Ohio, but still.
And if people want to find where, what else you're doing, you have a website that they can come
I do. I have MichelleTomko.com. I also do the City Pulse with Whitney Allman. We go to events and post that. We try to just ambush stars with our phones and our microphones plugged into our phones and do some guerrilla media, and that's a lot of fun a lot of times. And sometimes we do meaningful things there too, like we were the ambassadors for the Hero campaign, the Hero Teeny campaign, which is a don't drive drunk situation. So the City Pulse, my handle is Tom Comedy for everything, because my last name is Tomko, so T-O-M-K-O-M-E-D-Y. You can just Tom Comedy will take you to all of that stuff. And then, you know, my Facebook friend me. I still don't have my 5,000 friends. So I'll be any friend of Heather's is a friend of mine. I'll take you. Come be my Facebook friend, especially if you're young. I want to have young friends.
You want to have young friends?
Yeah. Yeah. Like if you're, I need like little people.
I'm probably
college.
Not the person for you. I'm not a young person. In
you're
any
younger
way
than me. Know. And I'm not ancient. I'm under the big 5-0. I'm well under the big 5-0, but still old enough that I don't know how to use my phone. So I love to have college friends who can show me how to use my phone or show me where to get weed, I guess. I'm not really plugging your podcast. I'm just plugging weed in general. Oh, my poor mother.
My poor mother.
I don't even smoke that much. I'm drinking water, Mom. Mom, I'm drinking water. It's just the name of the podcast.
Well, you know, the weed makes you thirsty.
Mom, I'm not high. I swear to God. I'm not high.
It's been a pleasure talking to you today. It's been a lot of fun. Thank you for being here.
I love coming here. I think I should have a segment, just a full-on segment.
We just had something up, I think.
After you go, like, this protest is here and here, and don't forget to sign the petition, and it's like, da-da-da-da-da-da, and then, like, the funny minute with Michelle Tomko. I'm like, you ever notice how people who arrest you to the zip ties too tight, and then I do, like, a whole riff about, you know, your political uprising.
I kind of like this idea.
Yeah, I think we'll spitball when we're done.
To my listeners, thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate you more than you could possibly know. We would not be here if it were not for you guys. We take no corporate money because, quite frankly, who's going to pay me to do this? That this is not the kind of thing that gets mass media attention and sponsors. We're just here with people trying to make the world better. And that's why we have to keep asking for your help. If at all possible, go under our website, www.njrevolutionradio, and click on that donate button. Even if it's only a couple of dollars a month, it helps it not have to come out of me and Brian's pocket to get out to all these events.
Russell Brand, if you're listening, she's the real deal. Hook up with her.
Do you know Russell Brand? Can you like hook us
up?
Yeah,
I know Russell Brand, and I'm here with no weed talking to you. Okay. Yeah, okay. I know I have lunch with Ellen later, but I just did this first.
But anyway, if you can, we really appreciate it. If you can even kick in a couple of dollars, those, you know, our fees add up. It's not, you know, it's a project every month. So if you can help us at all, we really appreciate it. The future's yours to create. Go out there and create it.